It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Back at it again with another Shades of Blue. This one, we're talking about all the controversial things. Religion, politics, Kyrie Shelton. Everything your heart could desire. I'm David Greenwald. Cody is burning in Mexico. I don't know why somebody with his fair skin would go somewhere tropical. But with me is Mike, he of the Mike Stats, Thad Bell, Chad Smith, Robert Russert. We are the Blue Testament. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Fantastic.
And we got a plug for the website, which is something that Cody often does not do.
And you introduced us. I feel like we're really off to a good start.
Guys, we won a game.
Everybody's happy, right?
I mean, come on, like,
is this bring back hope?
No.
I did see some people saying if they run the table, which is basically what they need to do to make the playoffs. It's just about
the question is, what do you classify as hope? I guess hopeful the season's going to be successful. No, hopeful for the future. Maybe hopeful that Kyrie Shelton may not start another game? Yes.
All right.
Mike, right to the point, though, man.
Let's lead off with this, because it's all I ever want to talk about from now on. Willy Agata. Mike, give us the takes.
I mean, the best thing I can say about Willy was the absolute sheer joy on his face when that first goal was when they ruled the first goal as a goal, basically. The just how happy he looked. It's one of those just really happy moments that the team hasn't had this year. You haven't seen that level of just joy from the team, and large part of that is simply due to the fact that they've not played well this year. They've not been scoring. They've not been playing well defensively. There's just been a lack of joy in the way the team plays. And so it was nice to just see a moment of pure joy out on the field. I mean, even like Tommy's goal earlier, it was less about, I think there was a lot less joy in that and more a sense of relief that we finally scored a goal. It was a really, really nice goal, but hey, we scored a goal. That's nice. instead of it being something where it was like with Agata's, and he just happiness. And I think that flowed through the rest of the game, honestly. Even when it got to 3-2, there was still just a little bit of joy in what was going on the field. So I don't know. I just was, that was my big point, was I just loved the way he looked after they got that opening, or after he got his first goal.
Yeah, Mike, you said joy about 8 times, I think, there. But that's exactly the word I was going to say. And, by the end of the third goal, I was like, what is going on here? It was just crazy. You know, we hadn't seen that all season. And like you said, joy. Yeah, that's what everybody had on their face for sure.
Chad, better celebration, jumping on / choking Peter Vermees or backflips?
Oh, definitely the jumping on, choking, and don't leave out the kiss on the cheek that he gave him afterwards. That we asked him post game if he'd ever been kissed on the cheek in a celebration. He goes, "Well, I've never been strangled." He came running at me, and he did tell him that he told the coach, he told Peter he was going to jump to his arms, but he just needed to drop that water bottle and embrace it. Like, you know, I don't. Somebody said on Twitter or our comments or something that Peter's not a hugger, and it looked about like it. Like, he didn't look comfortable with like this man leaping into his arms.
Yeah, and then somebody on Reddit, our favorite place, said, "Oh, what is Willie Agata whispering in Peter Vermees's ear?" No, that's when he kissed him on the cheek. He's not whispering in his ear. Come on,
whispering sweet nothings.
No, I think he did whisper. He probably said, "Kyrio."
Did you see the team put out? I feel like Cody's going to be bitter about this. They said, "I got a good feeling," and they put out some stats from Agata, because he's been saying, "I gotta go," which I've been adapting into, "I got a goal." And so "I got a good feeling." And there was a lot of very high stats for attacking runs, 27, 16 sprints, almost 92% passing, actually. Oh, yeah. And he scored a brace.
So,
and he made bench of the team of the week.
Yeah, only the bench. I was like, what did these other MLS teams do? I did see it was the highest scoring week in league history.
Yeah, it was going to take a lot for anybody to make team of the week this week with as many goals as there were. 57 on Saturday, and I think you add the 3 on Friday night, and it was 60 goals in this game week. So it was going to take a lot to get team of the week honors this week.
All right. So if I can play pessimist, and I want to go to you, Thad. As great as it was to see 2 goals go in, he also had the one-on-one with the keeper where he rounded him and had a shot saved off the line. His first goal, he kicked it into the keeper 3 different times, and just by the grace of VAR and not goal line technology, they counted. And then again, he had to be subbed out early due to cramping. Is there anything to worry about with Willie? Was this a one-off? What are your thoughts, Dad?
I don't expect him to score 2 goals every game, man, but I'm not too worried about the cramping, because, like, if he scores 2 goals and goes off with cramps in the 70th minute, who gives a shit, quite honestly? I would be all in favor of that formula going forward, but I'm not too worried about it. He'll get used to it, and the fact he cramps is because he ran so damn much. So, and then I'm not too worried about the 3 straight into the keeper from that point blank range, man. You almost couldn't do anything but hit the keeper. So I'm not too worried about that aspect. And the rounding the keeper one, man, it was a great move and a great save by the defender. So I'm not worried about it. I don't expect him to get 2 goals every game, though, although we need to set that expectation for him.
I mean, it's pretty amazing how much better everybody looked having a dangerous player at the 9.
I'm gonna interrupt. And maybe this is where you're going, but I've said all along the midfield had to be better, and the midfield was better because Tommy was in there, and that helped both the defense and the offense. I'm not saying there would have been 2 goals or 4 goals without Agata in there, but that Tommy helped that a lot. So, and Agata's runs helped that a lot, obviously. But I'm just gonna go with it was a midfield, not just the number 9. Sorry.
Well, I agree with that, and I had been down on Eric Tommy just due to the kind of the player profile without having seen him play, and he's been awesome. And I can only imagine what we're going to look like when Gotti Keane is back next year. And to have Remy, Gotti, and Tommy all in the midfield at one time, you know, we'll have a lot of class.
Yeah, and if Remy has to play forward in the midfield, like he moved up when Uri was forced into the game, and those passes that he had to Agata, just like one touch, clean, right up the middle, just beautiful stuff. That set him to the one where he rounded the keeper, and then the second one where kind of got it under his feet a little bit and tried to lay it off shallowy a little late, but the promise was there. So I'm looking forward to more of that.
All right, well, so speaking in midfield, Mike, Eric Tommy's goal. Can we call it a golazo?
I mean, personally, I hate that term, but yes. No, I mean, you look at the he's facing as the ball comes in, he's running towards goal. He adjusts his body for the looping ball from Espinoza. He turns his back to goal, chests it down, and while the ball's in the air, gets his body turned and can put it in. Put a volley on goal without the ball touching the ground. It's to the amount of skill and body control to be able to do that is, I mean, it's
quality German engineering.
Yes. It's, it's a quality goal. I mean, I said during the game that was goal of the season for Sporting. I know there's not a lot to choose from, but I rate that more so than Espinoza's goal from near midfield against Montreal, simply because of the difficulty of being able to do that. Basically, I mean, I love a good goal from distance, but I mean, I look at it the same way with the goal of the week voting this week, where you have Paul Mari from San Jose hitting a belter from about the distance Espinoza did, and you have Tommy's goal. And I still rate Tommy's goal just because I think it's a more difficult shot to hit. It's more difficult to do what Tommy did to score that goal than it is to just hit it with your purse, basically.
And then it's going to be bullshit when Bale wins goal of the week.
Yeah, and then Bale's going to win goal of the week over both of them. So
I mean, that was a pretty cool goal, though. I mean, like, Garrett scored a pretty cool goal.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to add. I think
not as good as Tommy's.
The defense was not good on Bale's goal.
The build up to the goal for Sporting for the Eric Tommy goal is so good too. Like the little pass from Shallowy into Agata, quickly flicks it back out into space. Shallowy runs onto it back to Espinoza, who curls a really good pass into the box too. So it was such a team goal, and that's just where the clip started. I don't even know all the passes that happened before we got to that point. I'm sure there was quite a few because, you know, that's the game Sporting's trying to play.
Well, so Robert, what were your thoughts on Espinoza? You know, Chad just mentioned that he had that beautiful pass, the assist to Eric Tommy. How do you think Roger played? Was this a vintage Roger performance?
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, as far as our tactic for the game was, our tactic was to sit back. You know, our line of confrontation was just over the halfway line. And that is tailor-made for Roger. It's tailor-made for, you know, an older lineup, if you will, a lineup that is a little more discretionary in how they react and where they react. So I think it was definitely a vintage Roger performance right up until, you know, he got the yellow card, which was vintage Roger too. And then for me, smart enough to take him off. Get him out of there, Peter, now.
Thad, was that a yellow?
Sure. Should've I actually don't even remember, man. It was
a yellow. Yeah. I have no problem.
I don't remember thinking it wasn't.
Yeah, it was a yellow card. There's no argument there. And no, subbing him at that point was the right move. He looked a little gassed, and the yellow card and the way the game was at that point, because they were up 3-0, it made sense. And if you have Hernandez, who's having a very good season, on the bench, there's no reason to not make a sub around the hour mark, especially for Espinoza, who, I mean, he turns 36 this year.
Yeah. And this is how he should be used, in limited amounts with early subs. I do remember being fearful when I saw Felipe stepping up to sub in, and that he would bring somebody else off instead of Roger, though.
Yeah, well,
Eric Tommy was like not going to be able to go 90, as he's still working his way back to fitness as well, because he's only been here for 4 games. And I was a little worried too, because I was like, when they started them both, I was like, well, neither of them is probably going to be able to go 90 minutes. So are they going to push Espinoza the entire game, or are we going to get poor Uri again coming on late, moving the midfield around, and then getting a handball? Like, this guy, a season to forget.
I would like to say, though, you know, at least Uri had his pants, his shorts at the appropriate length. He didn't have his sleeves rolled up. Douglas Costa was out there running around doing his best Uri impersonation with the shorts hiked up to his crotch. I thought maybe we'd orchestrated some sort of deadline day trade. It was fascinating.
No, there nobody were a few times when Uri had his shorts up, just so you know. I saw it.
Oh, no.
Robert was on shorts watch, apparently. you know, when you said he had his clothes on, it reminded, or his clothes in appropriate length, that reminded me, like, Thad and I were leaving the locker room, and he, like, buck naked, walks up behind us and pats us both on the back as he's leaving. And I was just like, I'm still not quite used to everybody being so confident walking around naked in there. So he made up for the lack of short shorts for you, David. He just went, you know, full blown.
Terrific.
Look on Thad's face.
So I saw a post on the site, and I didn't see this when I was at the game, but after Roger got his yellow, did he ask to be subbed off?
Jimmy had said it. He was sitting next to me in the press box, or a couple people over from me in the press box, and I heard him say it, but I was not looking. I was like typing or something at that moment, so Jimmy said he saw it.
Can we trust Jimmy?
He is Robert, a contributor on our website.
Robert, can we trust Jimmy?
I believe we can trust Jimmy, except for, you know, a few rumors here and there.
Jimmy's a 90% trust level. How about that?
I feel like you trust him more than me.
I'm not going to give that number, man.
Okay. Pretty low.
All right. So I want to talk about the last goal before we talk about the defense. So Daniel Shallowy, just an absolute, I don't even know what to call it. I want to call it a poacher's goal. But I mean, I don't even know if that's the right terminology for it. Robert, What would you call this?
Well, okay. I'm writing an article, and I'm going to have this as part of my article. But
on what website?
On the bluetestament.com.
Thank you.
Agata's run, though, he was in the middle of the pitch. He was between two defenders. But as Shallowy received the ball, he makes the smart move to the back post, the back of the defender. And that's such a smart move because, number one, the angle for Shallowy to play the ball, if Gatta was in the middle, very, very difficult. Number two, obviously, that gives Agata more time to get to a cross that goes straight across the box. So very smart move by Agata there, maybe just a natural goal scorer's movement. He didn't even think about it. But great play all around, and Agata's positioning to me was spot on.
Are we talking about the same play? In other words, what about Daniel's goal?
Yeah, I was talking about the fourth goal, but I agree, Robert. I mean, like, Daniel. And it's funny, somebody commented on how, like, Daniel was not having a very good game, and then commented on their own post and was like, he had the assist and the goal, and maybe I'm just crazy.
He had two assists.
Two assists.
The secondary on Tommy's goal.
It was fun watching the same person reply to themselves.
If he's going to have a bad game and have a goal and two assists, we'll take that also. He can throw a cramp in if he wants.
I'll go in on the Shallowy goal. So not a poacher's finish, but an opportunistic goal, because you see was that Arroyo, the defender? I couldn't remember which
one of you is getting a fine, by the way. One of you said that wrong, just FYI.
Anyway, I feel pretty confident in my pronunciation.
Anyway, so he looks up 2-3 times at back towards Bond in goal, and Shallowy plays the percentages expecting the ball to go back there and jumps the pass, basically. That's what he did. It was an opportunistic finish there by reading what was going to happen in the situation. Other times, the defender is going to cut to the outside to look to go back down the wing, and Shallowy is not going to get the ball there. He weighed the percentages in his head. He's like, hey, he's going back to Bond. I'm going to go this direction, and was able to jump the pass. And that's how he was able to get the goal. It just an opportunistic, smart play by reading what the defender was doing. It's what you want a striker to do in those situations.
Well, let's talk about the finish itself. I mean, that was a classic Shallowy finish. Yeah, not a whole lot of space. He thread the needle. That's classic Shallowy.
Thread the space with power and beat the keeper with pace.
Yeah.
Well, so Thad, you were shooting on that end for a change, right? Weren't you cauldron side when that happened?
I was.
What's the shot look like for you?
The ball hitting the side of the net coming directly at me. That's the only thing I could see. So yes, I have a ball quick. Hitting the side of the net shot.
All right. Robert, you were talking about hitting a shot with power. I do want to talk about the what I would say is the biggest downside of the match was that Johnny missed a PK. What were your thoughts on one?
Michael, you said about pace, and then first one you said, Mike, on your mic stat that Johnny has missed for us. Yeah, I mean, obviously the goalkeeper did his homework as well, which helped too, but disappointing in that moment. Are we wanting Agata to take PKs now too? Is that where we're at?
I'm not sure that I'm there. I mean, Russell, what? How many? I don't know. Mike could probably tell us. We got to do a da-da-da-da-da Mike
set. Hey, it's the Agata train.
How many PKs has he made in a row before that?
He was 7 for 7 in that includes shootouts before that miss.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Mike stat.
We're going to get a professional voice recorder to do that little thing there for you, Mike, so that whenever you're on or wherever we pull some stat from one of your articles, we can do exactly that. Is that okay? Or are you going to be embarrassed?
Works for me.
So did Bond just get lucky and guess right? Or did Johnny have a bad take, or was it a combination?
Combination. Johnny tends to go to his right, the goalie's left. So Bond, if he does his homework, knows that's where Johnny's going to go. And Johnny just didn't hit it well. He put it at a very savable height and didn't get it far enough into the corner that Bond wasn't going to be able to get there. So combination of the two, just good goalkeeping, good research, and a poor penalty kick.
Yep. And even if it wasn't good research, even if it wasn't good research, he went the right way. And I think this is exactly where Chad was going. He didn't put it on the ground. He didn't put it in the top. He put it at right the level that a decent keeper can reach if they guess right.
Yeah, exactly.
So can we talk about Chicharito's PK?
Sure.
I mean, tell us about it, Robert.
That was a good penalty kick.
His approach was very obvious, though. He really rounds the ball to the left side. It's pretty clear where he's going to go. Pulse camp initially guessed the right direction, and then I guess he second-guessed himself, trying to fake out Chicharito. I don't know what he was doing, but very clear to me where Chicharito was going there.
If we'd have had you in goal, man.
You know, I like Pulse camp, and he's so young and has so much room to develop and grow, but
for sure.
Watching him try to save PKs makes you really appreciate what we've had with Tim over the years.
Tim needs to take him aside and do a lot of PK work with him, because I think of the six now, counting the shootout in Sacramento, I'm not sure he's gone the right way. I'd have to go back and watch the Sacramento one again, which I don't want to do, so I'm not going to, but he's not gone I would say if he's gone the right way, he's gone maybe once of the six. He's gone the right way the PK's gone. I don't know if he's not reading it well or he's second guessing himself right now, but he's not looked great on penalty kicks so far.
And Chad, I see you raising your hand, and I'll come back to you. But Mike, I have a question, because you were a keeper, right?
Yes.
You played collegiately.
Collegiately, I moved to the field, but yeah.
Okay. Well, so can you walk the listener through who want to hear this? On like what the strategy is on, you know, what you're looking for when somebody's taking a PK, you know, why is Tim so much better at it than
everybody? The big thing for Tim is he's just, he's so quick in his reaction that he doesn't, if the guy doesn't tip him off, he's able to react quick. I've not seen a goalkeeper commit as late as I see Melia commit on penalty kicks. Most goalies are committing earlier because they're watching the eyes, they're watching the hips, they're watching the knees. Those are the things that you're taught as a, not really the eyes, because for the most part you can, I mean, eyes, you're going to try to fool players that way, but there's only so much you can do with when you're going to hit the ball with your hips and your knees to how you're angling your body, basically, to do that. I mean, the clearest example I can come back to where keepers reading, I mean, I'll go to MLS Cup 2013. I mean, the Vasquez save that Nielsen made. Vasquez looked to Nielsen's left, down at the ball, back to Nielsen's left, down at the ball, started running up, back to Nielsen's left, down at the ball. That was just blatantly obvious to me watching the game, watching it back, that Nielsen knew exactly where it was going simply by watching. But other times, I mean, I think of Melia's penalty kick save where Valeri tried to go right down the middle and Melia didn't move. You just are, as a goalie, you're just watching for little tells and you're doing your research. I mean, obviously, with where I played goalie, I didn't necessarily have research on where guys were going to go. But I mean, that is such a huge part of the game now, is researching, is having those stats of Russell goes to his right, he's gone to his right this many times, he went this way. And I mean, if you go back and even watch, MLS posted a video, I think in early 2014, that looked back on the PK shootout in MLS Cup 2013. And they had Nielsen and Raimondo talking about it. And Raimondo's going through all this list of these things, like the one I really remember is he was talking about Bieler's first PK. And he's like, Bieler goes to this side all these times, but the one time he took a shorter run up, he went to this side, and Bieler was lined up a little bit shorter than normal. So I was thinking he was going that way, and in the end, he ended up going his normal way. So there's just so much research that goes into to goalkeepers and what they do with penalty kicks. And like I said, it then comes down to just reading the player, because in the end, that's what you have to do. Guys have their preferred location, but you got to be able to read kind of what they're going to do as well, or else you're not going to have a chance.
And what I wanted to add, and I think that's really good insight, Mike, because I've never played goalkeeper. It sounds terrifying. It's not a plan I want to take up. But what I wanted to add is MLS Next Pro has been kind of unwatchable, but at the beginning of the season, I was trying to watch it. And you all probably heard, if it's a draw at the end of regulation, they do penalty kick shootout. And the opening game, at the second game, I think it was the opener, Pulskamp gives up all five PKs to the Rapids two players, you know, mostly, you know, either backups or second team guys. So there is something to, you know, he needs some studying. But Thad and I were talking after the game. I don't know if y'all remember, a few years ago, there was that article in The Athletic that was talking about how Raimondo, this guy chased Raimondo around. He's trying to figure out Raimondo's secrets to how he stopped all these PKs. And it's all about like the way the guys place the ball, the way their hands are angled or something along these lines. And ever since that article, Melia's given up a lot more PKs than he used to give up. And I have to think he was using the same technique that Raimondo was using, because, you know, he used to be Nick's backup. Mike's digging into the stats. I can already see it. He's like, how many has he given up? He's pulling up the spreadsheets.
That's where I'm going. I was pulling up my stats on penalty kicks. I won't waste the time. You guys can move on, but I'm curious myself.
Well, so we've spent a lot of time talking about the offense, and we had, I think, an expected goals of 3.1. But the defense, you know, we gave up two, one on a PK, one on that had initially been called as offsides and got overturned by VAR. But the defense looked good. And I was very surprised by that, because we ran out the oldest guys we could find to play defense. Chad, talk to me about what did I watch? How did I watch Ben Sweat and Graham Zusi put in a good shift?
Yeah, honestly, I'm a little unsure myself. I've probably been the most down on Ben Sweat person all year. And the whole game, I was like, gosh, he's playing really well. Maybe he just needed a run of games. He just needed some minutes. And then all the late fallings apart, I kind of ended up wanting to blame Ben Sweat for it all, because one, he keeps onside for the Chicharito, who gets the goal. And then on the last one, he's so wildly out of position while his team doesn't have the ball. He's like up playing central midfield or something instead of left back. And then they just play into that space behind him, which leads to the pass that leads to the handball. I mean, that's a few connections to blame Sweat for that. I think you wanted me to be positive, but I couldn't stop myself. I still ended up being negative.
Yeah, I don't think Sweat had that great of a game as everybody was saying. There's also another moment where he's literally running in circles trying to defend in our box, and none of it works. But I mean, if you really look at the game, the Galaxy had some really good buildups into our box, and we had a fair amount of emergency defending, if you will, one-on-one defending that we had to get right. And if we didn't, you know, probably would have been a goal. So I don't know if the defense was that fabulous. Just in the moments it had to be, it was.
I mean, we only had three block shots, and the Galaxy only took six shots.
So that's part of
it. And Pulskamp only had one save.
But what the thing I thought that was really interesting, and I'd be curious to hear your guys' thoughts, you know, we had, what, 14 or 15 goals called back against Austin for offsides, and we kept drawing LA offside. LA, I think, was called offsides five times, and Chicharito was visibly frustrated and was kind of throwing a temper tantrum in the second half every time the flag went up. I mean, are we just getting lucky, or are we deliberately playing an offside trap now?
I think it's more of how those teams are choosing to play. I mean, both teams played a higher line. And with that, I'd have to go back and look at the stats to see where they compare league-wide. But I know we, for example, don't play a high line, and we're rarely ever called offside, basically. So I think it comes down to more the style that LA and Austin choose to play compared to how we play, for example.
Yeah, I think that's got a lot to do with it. And I think but I also think that we have with the veteran back line, they were maybe able to do it a little bit better than if you'd had a younger back line out there.
You don't talk about Robert Volater like that. I want to talk about my favorite play of the game. My absolute favorite play, maybe of all season, was Chicharito getting yellow carded for flopping in the box, diving, looking for a call. Robert, did this bring you as much joy as it brought me?
Well, if you listen to the commentary on the Twitter feed, the guys are like, oh, that's a clear PK. That's a clear PK. And his color man's like, no, that was pretty much a flop. But hey, you know, I can't mention this without Diego Rubio's flop. Yeah. We all saw it.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. That was so bad.
Yeah. I mean, the guy does kick him in the back of the leg just ever so slightly, but then he like delays a bit. Falls over, acts like his leg needs to be amputated. Then he starts grabbing his face, probably to cover up the fact that he's smiling to sell this thing. I've long contended, if you want to get flopping out of the game, don't do an undisclosed fine, which we have no clue how much they're getting fined. Suspend them, and then they'll stop flopping. Suspend them.
So I didn't see the Rubio play. On a scale from like 1 to Neymar, where are we talking?
He's like an 8, yeah.
Just under Neymar, yeah.
He didn't roll for like 25 feet afterwards.
But he wasn't really running to have the momentum that Neymar would have for that much of a roll. But
Neymar didn't have that much momentum.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah. Guys, it's a World Cup here. I'm so excited to watch Neymar roll around in the desert. This is going to be great.
Hope he gets sand fleas.
Oh, my God. What have we missed? What do we need to talk about, guys?
All right, we're running out of time, man. We just got a couple
Kansas
minutes.
City Currents.
Right.
Nine unbeaten, 6 wins, 3 draws. Maybe the best they've looked all year until they did give up a late goal, as they are wont to do. Robert, your thoughts?
I actually watched the game. I just want to put that out there.
Wait, did you watch the game like Cody watched the game? So you didn't actually, or like, and it's just virtue signaling, or did you actually watch this game?
75% of it I actually watched. 25% I was doing something else, so I was on the background, but still.
So Chad, where are the Current at in the table?
Now I have to look it up. They were fifth as of the end of that game. Okay. Yeah.
They're still fifth. They're I think 3 points out of first. And I mean, everybody in between them is just like 1 or 2 points. So they could leapfrog at any time with the right results. And they have 8 games left, 4 at home, 4 on the road, only 2 games against teams above them, one of them being the first place team, one being a team that's either right above them or 2 above them. So they actually could if they play it right, they could get a lot of points. They play like the bottom 2 teams, I think 3 or 4 games. So
yeah, they're only 3 points out of first place, even though they're in fifth. So they're 3 points behind both Portland and San Diego, who they defeated over the weekend. And honestly, they should have defeated the last time they met them, but a late kind of softish PK,
which they're want to give up.
Yeah.
There was a transfer rumor that we were in on a player, right?
Yeah, Dumernay. She's like an 18-year-old Haitian forward. Ooh, you got to go watch the highlights on the article I wrote. So dynamic, so exciting. And like the highlights are full of her playing against like the U.S. like U-20 girls. But then in this last, the CONCACAF W Championship, she was playing for the full senior team and she was putting the senior team U.S. backline under pressure. Like if she had anybody on her team that could really step up and help her, they may have given up some goals because she was just all over them.
So is this still a rumor at this time or is she coming?
I haven't heard anything new.
I actually asked Potter about it, the last availability, and he goes, well, there's a lot of teams looking for her. There's like 30 other teams, because he won't say anything. He gives actually no information.
Dad's not bitter at all about this. Sam is, by the way, out for the season after it kind of sounded like she was right about to come back and play. So,
that sounds on brand for Kansas City soccer.
Yeah. Although
she was in training like 3 weeks ago in full training, and then she disappeared. And then on Thursday, I asked about her and, well, you know, still waiting for the medical staff to tell me when she can play. And then on Friday, she's a season end injury. Boom.
All right. Thad,
I have one quick observation. And Ndembe and his calves, but who's the right winger for current? I think she scored. Lanky legs, long legs, and puts her socks above her knees. Who is that?
CC Kaiser,
okay. KC native. Yeah.
I don't like commenting. I don't like that our podcast is commenting on women's bodies. This is, you know, we get canceled.
That's interesting.
Thad, who are you interviewing tomorrow?
Peter, Roger, and Zusi, hopefully.
So are we going to have a pod with Roger and Zusi, maybe?
No, it's just a regular interview availability still. So. Cody took the board with him. If he left the board, I would have tried it.
Gotcha.
He took the board to Cancun where he is by himself?
Well, he's holding it up around his neck to help draw on the rays.
And we have 1 minute.
All right. Well, 1 minute left. So let's get plugs in. We are the Blue Testament. Please go visit us. If you like the comment, if you like the podcast, rate and review 5 stars. If you don't like the podcast, you can tweet at that Cody though. That's that CODYTHO. Thad, what's your Twitter?
I forget.
At the back post. Good Lord. Chad.
At play for 90.
Mike.
At down the byline.
Robert.
At SPKC Life.
And I don't have Twitter because I think that would be negative for my mental health and well-being.
And you'd get banned. I'm pretty positive you'd get banned from Twitter.
Wow.
Which is why he won't tell what his Twitter is.
That's right. What his Twitter is, but he doesn't comment. He just follows along for the posts.
I follow for like when Mike drops us a Bratislavan journalist is telling us that we're in on a player and I want to look at the transfer rumors. Guys, thanks for listening. Go Sporting! Woo!
Anything to My Bud Bud Tang's got me drinking.